Tom Halverstead is a scientist at the Southern Research and Outreach Center at Waseca. The calendar says early February, so that means we have to check in with Tom over at the Southern Research and Outreach Center at Waseca. So, Tom, if you say, what's the first thing that comes to my mind about our January of 2022, cold, darn cold?
Yep, cold. Coldest January since they coined that term polar vortex back in 2014. That January was about the same as this January. In fact, I counted this year we had 22 days below zero, and that year we only had 20. So similar temperatures. The issue that year, though, back in 2014, is February was even colder. So maybe we won't go that way, but it's been plenty cold. You know, a new year after last year, virtually other than February, every month was warmer than normal. So far, we're starting out 2022 colder than normal. We'll see what the rest of the year has in store.
What was our average temperature in January compared to the average over the years?
The average this year was 6.5 degrees. That is 6.5 degrees colder than normal. So we average about 12, 13 degrees in January. We got plenty cold. And snowfall, pretty much right on normal. We had 11 inches. That's within a half inch of our normal. So other than being cold, pretty close to normal on the snowfall side.
Do you remember what the tendencies are if you have a really cold January, that continues into February, or can the pendulum swing the other way? What I'm thinking is, I remember if it was really cold in January, it seemed like we had a pretty cold February too.
Well, I think the bigger indicator is how much snow we have. If we have some of those Januaries where we have 20, I've even seen up to 30 inches of snow on the ground, then it really gets hard to warm up in February. Now, this year, we didn't have a lot of snow, and we only have about 4 inches now, so really it only takes a few days of some sunshine and near-freezing temperature to kind of thaw some of that off, and then it can warm up. When we have a deep snow cover, that's when we stay cold.
We'll put you on the spot, Tom. What is the frost depth right now, or maybe the soil temperature at the 2 or the 4 inch depth? Do you kind of keep an eye on that too?
We do. Our frost depth here, I looked at, we have 18 inches. That's not outside of the range of normal. Lamberton, their frost was down to 31 inches. And that, too, kind of relates to the snow cover. We had some fairly light snow cover early in the month, and I was looking at our soil temperatures. Our 2-inch soil temperature around the middle of January, when we only had an inch or even just a trace of snow on the ground, they got down to 15 degrees, which is enough to impact western corn rootworms. I was out in Lamberton yesterday, and Bruce Potter was talking about that. Western corn rootworm eggs can't survive some of these very cold temperatures, and we've had enough that maybe there's a slight impact on them so far. If we expose our soil in February and get some more cold weather, we could do that even more. Now, recently we've had some pretty decent snow cover, and when we drove out there, there was pretty good snow all the way to Lamberton. So our soil temperatures now are more in the mid-20s. But if we get exposed soil and cold weather, that cold air can penetrate and impact some of those insect pests.
Talking to farmers over in the Lamberton area, compared to the farmers you were talking to around here in winter crops day at SROC, probably the topics that came up were pretty much the same.
Pretty much the same, except I think out that way they didn't have quite the year we had. We had timely rains. I think they missed out. They were a little bit drier, I think, early in the year, and I think some of their corn shut down. I think they had some more like 100-bushel corn yields, where a lot of ours were in the 200. So I think their corn yields suffered a little bit more. Then I think they got extra rain in the fall that we didn't, so I think both a little bit short on moisture going into spring, but that's not a bad thing.
And in terms of weed management, pretty much the same issues here over there, right?
I think they are battling the same thing. It's water hemp that's been the big problem for most of us. That's something we have to key on in soybeans, and they certainly were anxious to hear about things that we're doing to try to take care of that. And soil-applied herbicides are where it's at, and I was surprised at how well they did this year in a dry spring. So we'll see what the future brings, but that's what people are really targeting is we need some soil-active chemistry to take care of our water hemp and into the season even. We can't just put on a before planting. We need to kind of keep at those soil-active chemistries.
I've had great success, Tom, 2 years in a row with that second pass mid to late June with the group 15. I like acetochlor because it doesn't burn the leaves and you get a little bit of rain. It's worked really well to give me that season-long control of water hemp.
Yep, that seems to be. We need to think about adding a soil residual to our post-emergence, and that's been very helpful. And then once the soybeans canopy and take care of themselves like we hope they do every year, then we're even better off.
What's the latest you've been hearing scuttlebutt, Tom, on price and availability of herbicides? The thing that I've heard is maybe glyphosate or Liberty glufosinate, but pretty good supply and reasonable prices of pretty much everything else. Or what have you been hearing, Tom?
Well, I've heard that glyphosate might be an issue. I've heard some people talk about their supplier saying, okay, I've reserved you about 50% of what you always buy just to make sure you've got some, so plan on that. Glufosinate, I've never understood Liberty. It always seems to be in short supply. I don't know why that is. I'm not in the manufacturing side. It must not be very easy to make. It must not be easy to store and put together, but seems like Liberty always has supply issues. So on the other side, I've heard some of the generics might be. If you're into a generic, you might have to buy a name brand this year. So that might be something you have to look at. Look at the active ingredient in your product, and if you can't get it on the generic side where it's usually been a little more cost effective, you might have to buy a name brand product.
And of course, the key is talk to your supplier, co-op, retailer, whoever it is, probably sooner rather than later. Don't wait until March or April or even May.
No, I think it's a good time to talk to them and let them know what your challenges are. If you've had a ragweed problem in the past, say, I need something that's going to take care of ragweed so they can help you reserve some of those things that their dealership feels has been working for them and go from there. So it'd be helpful to let them know what your plans are and let them know what your worst weed problems are. And I think that might be a good first step in the process.
Back to the weather again. So with Tom predicting a more mild February then because we don't have a real deep snowpack, I'm trying to be an optimist here.
I've even talked to the people in climatology about can we really look at 1 month's trend to the next, and it doesn't always correlate. So I would say it's a toss-up. Flip a coin, and you'd probably be just as good as asking anyone like me.
Well, we did have a pretty long pattern of warmer than normal for almost all of 2021. So to say the pattern changed just with 1 month might be a stretch, too. There again, I'm trying to be an optimist.
Hopefully we haven't changed the pattern. Now, we did that last year when our pattern was warm, warm, warm. And then February, pow, we had that huge cold blast that was life-threatening to the southern states. But didn't really impact us that much. Now, maybe this January will be our cold month and the rest of it will straighten back out. That would be nice.
Tom Halverstedt, scientist at the Southern Research and Outreach Center at Waseca.